In a dystopian future, rival gangs in the 245 and 248 fight for control of Fraser Park by challenging each other to the dance battle video game Beat Beat Revelation. This week on Discount Film Critics, we discuss the 2011 film The FP. Directed by Brandon and Jason Trost, starring Jason Trost, Art Su, Caitlin Foley, and Nick Principe. Runtime, 1 hour and 22 minutes. Welcome to Discount Film Critics. I'm Ray.
This is Ryan.
Hey, Ryan. All right. This week's episode, The FP. The FP. So, again, we saw this on Amazon Prime, streaming for free, if you want to check it out. Part of Freevee. Yes, another, you know what I noticed about this movie, Ryan? Another Grapevine movie. Laser Blast took place. It was shot on the Grapevine. And this was shot on the Grapevine as well.
Yeah, Laser Blast, I've totally missed that part of it. So it was a nice connection.
So the FP stands for Fraser Park, which is right there.
Beautiful Fraser Park.
Yeah. 50% of the movies we review. That's one of the. We should just have a podcast. We should Grapevine movies. All movies that take place on the five between Bakersfield and Los Angeles.
Yeah.
All right, Ryan. Can you give us a quick synopsis of the FP?
I'll try. So the FP is not post-apocalyptic, because the time is not really set in any specific era, but it's a time where the FP, Fraser Park area, is... there's kind of a civil war between the North and South, the 248 and the 245 fighting for control of the area and most importantly, the alcohol distribution. And it's a time where things are heated, to say the least. There's a lot of disputes are... and tempers are at a boiling point, and there's only one way to resolve them through Beat Beat Revelation, a thinly veiled version of Dance Dance Revolution, arcade game, probably still popular, but I know from years past, yeah. A game I'm not really familiar with as a participant, but I've seen a lot of people play it.
I used to love it. I used to love Dance Dance Revolution.
I don't have the coordination for it. It was very impressive. I don't know. I can go further into it, but I think that'll come up in the discussion.
No, that's good. That's good. So, yeah. So the genre I consider this movie, and I don't know, maybe you think differently, but this is definitely a parody movie. And what stuck out to me is there's two types of films it's parodying. One is it's clearly a parody of 8 Mile. Also, 8 Mile and kind of the 80s, like, movies like Break-In or like the 80s breakdance movies where there was like the evil breakdancers against the good breakdancers. And I could see, you know, kind of like the genesis of this is like, well, you know, kids don't really do dance battles, you know, like, oh, we don't do, but they do play video games. Yeah.
Kids don't do but dance battles. They leave it up to the adults.
Yeah. Well, that's right. That's part of the joke in this is you've got people that are clearly in their 30s acting like teenagers. Like, I think that's kind of like one of the running jokes through the movie.
And I'll be honest, like, I kind of am in the camp that feels like all teenage roles should be played by 30-year-olds. there's a lot of evidence that shows getting kids playing their age does not bode well for their future selves. But I thought it was fun. I read that it was really heavily influenced by like Rocky In fact, like it's even some parts are like beat for beat, but no pun intended. But it was, yeah, I'm with you. Like it's definitely a parody, definitely like slow budget, but it does not. I mean, the passion that they have for making the project, I think, comes through. I love the movie. I'll just be honest right off the bat. I love the movie. There's a lot to it that like I wouldn't usually be a fan of, but I don't know. Yeah. There's something about this project that I just I love it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it kind of falls between two spectrums here. One is like as far as I'm concerned, like the pinnacle of parody movies is like. Is like early Zuckerberg, or I'm sorry, Zuckerberg, early Zucker Brothers, like Airplane and Top Secret. And then you kind of also have like, you know, I'd even throw like Christopher Guest in there with like the parody, you know, like Spinal Tap, like, you know, parodies on, you know, rock and roll documentaries and stuff like that. Like that's like top shelf. And then you have beneath that, like, remember in the early 2000s, we had like teen movie and disaster movie and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I found this was better than that. Like I wouldn't put it up there with the Zucker Brothers, like Zucker Brothers at their peak. But it was definitely better than the like teen movie and stuff like that, because those, what I did not like about those movies is instead of like the FP had like one coherent story that they stuck with and ran with, instead of like the like teen movie and disaster movie, like they pull a bunch of movies from the genre and
have too a bunch dependent on what they're parodying.
Yeah, and it's like joke about all these different movies, and it just becomes like this weird compilation of like visual jokes. And it's, yeah, this was a little bit more like I was able to kind of get into this more than those movies.
It's got its own lore that it builds and doesn't even build. It's kind of in place and you're just left to kind of accept it and see where it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny, like you could tell, like, you know, there was some like, I don't know, like there were some popular actors in it. You know, like the lead and the lead characters, they weren't actors that I were familiar with, but like Clifton Collins Jr. would pop up, and I'm like, you know what? I bet you he's like a friend of somebody. I think James Remar is in this also.
It's funny that you didn't recognize him because I didn't like Clifton Collins Jr. I recognize the name, but not the face.
Yeah, James Remar is in this.
Did you recognize the actor who played KCDC?
KCDC.
He was the hype man, the guy who would kind of do the commentary during the amp battles.
No, I'm trying to look up on IMDb here and see.
He's probably, at least to me, he was most known as most well known as Johnny Vang from the Crank 2 High Voltage.
Oh my gosh.
He's the guy that Jason Statham's chasing through Chev Chelios is chasing through the movie. There's with that kind of reading, that was kind of a light bulb went off in my head, because there's a similar style to that movie and another Neville Dean Taylor movie, Ghost Rider Spirits of Vengeance. Brendan Trost, who was co-director, was cinematographer on those movies. So there's quite a connection between those, which, you know, Crank High Voltage and Spirit of Vengeance, or you know, the quality might not be as debatable, but they are very fun movies to watch.
Well, yeah. I mean, this I found like, also Sean Whalen. I know I recognized him. Sean Whalen, he was the dad, the love interest dad. Yeah, he's been in a bunch of stuff. He was like in Twister and all that. He's a character actor that it pops up a lot. But you know, I mean, I think one important, if you're doing a low budget movie, like one of the things that you have to kind of get right is like image quality and sound. And there was no problem with that here. They did a good job. And I thought the acting was pretty good. It's so hard to do. Like if you're, I don't know. It's comedy is hard. Comedy is hard. And it's hard to do I don't know if they're like a movie that's like purposely silly. Like I've seen we watch Laser Blast. That's like so bad it's funny kind of thing.
Yeah.
And when you try and emulate that, knowing that like, hey, we're trying to make this funny, it's really difficult. Like it's really hard. Like you really got to be good. I don't know. I mean, it's funny. Like there were some things that I just found, like they're like little things I just found hilarious. Like a couple of instances. One is, and I don't like, you, most people probably wouldn't even notice, but the scene where, well, just the inciting incident in the whole thing, like J-Tro is the hero's name. His buddy, so they're playing this Dance Dance Revolution game, and his buddy gets involved in a dance battle and he loses, and somehow he also dies from it.
Yeah, that would be Bitro, his older brother.
Bitro, yeah.
Yeah, and they never explain how it kills the
no.
people, which that's I think is great that they don't explain. Yeah.
He's like losing and he's like starts to die and then he's like, get up. Yeah. So his big brother dies, and that kind of sends him on like a vengeance quest. And again, like yeah. This is where like you said, like Rocky or like some of these 80s movies where like the hero hooks up with a kind of like a guru. It's funny. Like I'll be honest, Ryan, like I didn't really care for this movie. But in talking to you about it, I'm like, hey, that was kind of like, this is kind of funny.
Maybe things. By the end of this, I'll have you won over.
Yeah, maybe I'll have you won over.
But, I'm not going to say it's perfect. It's like there's a lot you could that can turn people off.
Yeah.
I personally, like one of the things that I have an issue sometimes with is when there's like a lot of vulgar language. Like I don't have a problem with it for the most part, but I haven't thought about this too much, but I think I was kind of turned off at an earlier age watching like Kevin Smith movies, which aren't bad, but like they lean like really heavily into
cursing, yeah,
and it kind of, and then going into like college and watching projects for like some film classes, there's a lot of projects lean into that, and it's so I think to me it comes across as kind of like lazy and an amateur, not to say that it is, but that's just like something that I kind of usually shy away from, but I didn't really mind it in this. It just it kind of goes along with the what like made up lore of it and the different phrases that they've got and
like what one of the, as going back to like the little bit I found was funny, and I don't know if you noticed this, but when they like, so he has his buddy, what's his buddy's name, the guy that's played by Art Su, KCDC, when they're going down, so they're going down to look for the guru, and they have this like secret lair where he hangs out.
Well, yes. Sorry, not to interrupt, but let's like, so Bitro dies in the dance battle. J-Tro goes off to be a lumberjack for a year.
Oh, and, I forgot about that.
And then KCDC comes to find him because he's, and tells him like how bad things have gotten as the 245 led by LWE has kind of taken over. LWE inherited his dad's liquor store, and for some reason that makes him in charge of liquor distribution to the community, which he's kind of cut off, which has led to alcoholics becoming drug addicts. And that means, since there's no alcoholics, for some reason that means no homeless people. And for some reason that means no one to feed the ducks. And so ducks have left the FP. And so this is a great concern to KCDC. Yeah. Who you know, brings our hero to the secret lair. Sorry, go on.
No, so they're climbing down, they have to climb down a ladder. And when KCDC, he like does a little like hop off the ladder. And I thought it was the funniest thing. And then the other part I thought was really funny was when J-Tro is, he's kind of out walking around back in town, and he sees his old like love interest. And he's trying to, like, he doesn't want her to see him. So he kind of like dives behind this car. Like he does this like little like fall behind the car. I don't know. I thought it was funny. I laughed out loud. But I thought the lead was pretty funny. Like I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, he was a good straight man, which I think really helps with a parody movie. Just like Liam Neeson in the Naked Gun movies.
Leslie Nielsen.
I'm jumping ahead because I think he's playing a Frank Drebin in a new version.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Leslie Nielsen. Yeah. He's a great straight man for all the stuff going on around him.
Yeah. The other thing I found really funny is, so they have like the training montage,
mm-hmm.
and before they go into like he's about to do the big confrontation, their guru decides, oh, what's his name? What's the coach's name?
BLT.
BLT. He comes up with this idea that they're going to need GATs. So he hands out guns. The one guy has a slingshot.
Yeah.
That culminates in, again, an exact a bit taken from Naked Gun, where they have a gunfight where they're taking cover, but they're like 5 feet away from each other.
Yeah,
but I mean, like, it was, I don't know, I thought that was funny. And then like you know, he's like, we need GATs, and then he hands him the guns, and then J-Tro is like, he's like kind of like disappointed that like it's come to this kind of thing, and like he's got like this revolver, like this old style revolver. Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I found that to be pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing with the love interest, and like they're trying to get back together, but she's kind of with the villain. That is taken straight from a lot of 80s movies. Like that's what that reminded me of, with like, you know, like they spark up their romance a little bit, but then the bad guy pulls up in his pickup truck and he's like, get in the car.
Like, Stacy, yeah. She is with LWE, probably for a lot of reasons, but since he's in charge, but one of the reasons is to keep her dad in booze so he doesn't turn to drugs. I mean, we kind of glossed over, he's a big part of the movie. LWE is, to me, one of the best characters, or at least portrayals of like a villain that I can remember in quite a while. He's got a great look. The actor looks nothing like how he depicts LWE. In fact, I think he even, like, the actor shows up as an extra in some scenes. And you wouldn't know it.
I did notice one of the bad guys, James DeBello, from, he played Beatbox.
Yeah.
He has two names, Beatbox and Busta Bill. yeah, he was from Cabin in the Woods.
Oh yeah, I love that.
Yeah, movie. He was one of the guys. He was the jock guy with the baseball cap and Cabin in the Woods.
Lee Valmassi, I think, is who played LWE. And it's a real shame. I don't think he's done any other parts, or if he has, like, it's been very few and far between. Mm-hmm. But I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah, no, he was good. You know, he has that. He talked with that, like, I know he had like a funny
grill affect. And
Yeah.
He at one point he's kind of taunting the hero, showing up in a giant gold eye patch. he's got some of the best lines of the movie, which I took so many screenshots. One of my favorite is, two. What are you for Halloween? A bitch. and another one is, hey, hope you're ready for this shit. Cranberry juice.
I know. One of the bad guys taunts him about like being a pirate. Like,
yeah. And the Jason Trust, who plays J-Tro, he's actually the patch is for a good reason. He's blind in his right eye.
I looked it up. Yeah, like I saw it on IMDb. I was like, wow, like, yeah, he actually wears that eye patch.
And apparently, if I guess I haven't gone back to watch it, but he shows up in character as J-Tro in This Is the End, the Seth Rogen, James Franco movie. Yeah, I think he's in the towards the end, the cannibals.
Yeah. That's pretty funny. Yeah, I'll have to go back and check that out. So yeah, he goes through, like, he has his big brother dies. He goes off, becomes a lumberjack, comes back to town. The scenes, I don't know, some of the scenes, you can tell like a lot of so many like little influences. But I couldn't help but think when he was like walking through the streets of town, like as a newcomer after being away, like it couldn't help but remind me of like Rambo First Blood, mm-hmm. like where Sylvester Stallone's like walking through the rural town, like, yeah, you know, he's kind of like a aimless drifter like that. Yeah, that like that. It reminded me of that a little bit too.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, so he goes, he finds the coach, and they do all this training. The training stuff was kind of funny. Like he's playing the Dance Dance Revolution game with his buddy, like on his back. Mm-hmm. And then that's totally a like Karate Kid type of thing. And then there's like there's like a henchman that he has to, like, he knocks off first. Remember, he goes in and they slip him, like they drug him. So he's like, mm-hmm. out of it. And then he has the dance battle with the guy and still manages to win.
Yeah, that's a Triple Deco 1000 is the henchman. Because he can't jump right into a battle with LWE. He's got to work up his street cred, which I appreciate. I think it's good that he has to earn it. But yeah, he gets drugged, still wins. And
he takes a drink and he's like, oh, he's like, what's in this? And then the girl comes up and is like, it's, you know, like, says whatever. Like, yeah. Some of the dialogue, I could not understand what they're saying, but I was like, it's cool. Like, it's fine. But then I thought it was funny. I rely on
closed captioning a lot.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. He takes a drink. He starts like tripping out and then he's like, oh, whatever. And he like drinks the rest of it. I love that was kind of.
She yells in his face, "Hope you like meth."
is that what she says?
Yeah, they laced his drink to kind of put it in Triple Deco 1000's favor, but yeah, didn't work out for him.
This is much like Dune Part 2 in the gladiator arena scene.
Yeah, that's true.
Drug your opponent so you can have an advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. So, during you mentioned the training, he learns, well, throughout the movie, he learns four rules of the beat. Do you remember what the four rules are?
I'm sure once you say them, I'll remember.
We got balance, B for balance, E for expeditiousness, A for aggression. That's when they're covering aggression. LWE and his friends drive by and throw a condom at
J-Tro. Oh yeah.
Which is gross, but made me laugh.
He's like pushing that wagon thing. Or yeah. Like he's doing his training. Yeah.
Yeah. And then T for tempo.
Okay.
Yeah. That is a strong part of his training. The triple Deco 1000 match. That guy shows up and he's the only one with a Russian accent throughout the movie, which I thought was kind of funny.
What happened to James DeBello character? Like, did he just disappear from the movie?
Remind me who that one was again.
He was kind of like a henchman. He was a beatbox.
They show up at the, they're there to back up LWE in the end. It's the three of them versus J-Tro, KCDC, and BLT.
Oh, yeah, he's in the gunfight, right?
Yeah. There's the other, I'm not going to even hint at what the other henchman's name is, because a lot of, because it's said a lot, but I, not by me.
I think I know what you mean.
Yeah. It's a varied amount of training for ranging from just running to clay pigeons all to get ready for this dance battle.
Gunfight.
Yeah.
And they're perfect shots with the clay pigeons.
Yeah.
We had two movies take place on the Grapevine. We had two movies where the villain drugs his opponent to try and get an advantage. We had two movies where in the final showdown, somebody is a crack shot with a slingshot.
Not only is it a crack shot with a slingshot, KCDC also sings the national anthem right before the final.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah,
he's got 75% of the words right.
Oh, but 100% passion for the country and for that song.
They're like, come on. Yeah, that was pretty funny. That was pretty missed.
Yeah, and the three round cage match. J-Tro comes out on top.
And then he grabs his girlfriend and takes off. Well, no, they have the gunfight, which again is taken straight from Naked Gun. And they're 5 feet away. They're like behind cover. They're 5 feet away. They're just shooting. Like the one dude's got like a revolver, and they're just shooting. Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah.
And then he grabs his girlfriend, and they have a chase.
Yeah, they were like a lot more accurate with the shots of the clay pigeon training than they were in the actual shootout.
That was the gag. And then, well, I'm trying to remember. Oh, well, before that, they address, because one of the things is like the girlfriend, what is her name again?
Stacy.
You never see her father, but you hear him like screaming profanity at her from inside the trailer where they live. Mm-hmm. And then when you finally see him, it's Sean Whalen, who is like this super slight guy, and J-Tro beats him up. But yeah, that character was like, it was really silly, but like she kind of had an arc. I think that's like important. That's important for something like this. Like, even if it's like totally ridiculous and totally silly, like your characters should have arcs. You know what I mean? Like she, like part of, you could tell like part of the reason why she was with the bad guy was because, you know, like she probably had low self-esteem, her father, you know, like she was kind of under the thumb of all these men, and she kind of breaks out with the help of J-Tro at the end. I was like, oh, good on them for, you know, taking some like character development seriously. Cause I mean, even it's still funny, even though, you know, I mean, like where you could veer off into trouble is when you're just doing like teen movie and disaster movie where it's just like, oh, we're just going to be silly and goofy the whole time. Like, yeah, you have a little bit of story. It makes it better when it feels like, I don't know, like, yeah, it's so hard to do comedy when you're trying to do comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're just, I'm silly 24/7, but yeah, like have, you know, a little bit of character development, a little bit of arc, you know, that it's good. It's a good thing.
It's harder than, I think it's kind of universal from comedic actors, even like, it's hard to do comedy. It's like, people think it's easy, but oftentimes it seems to be that it's tougher than like dramatic roles.
Well, we know that the best comedians, well, there's a different, there's one thing to be like a stand-up comedian. It's another thing to be a comedy actor in movies, but the best comedy actors are great actors. I mean, a lot of people maybe don't realize, but Robin Williams went to Juilliard. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like, if you're a great actor, you can play funny. I don't know. That's what I've always thought that, that, you know, you know, and you see like some like guys and girls that do, you know, comedy, and then all of a sudden they do a serious role, like a dramatic role, and they're like really good at it. Like, yeah, like, I don't know. I think to be a great comedian in a visual medium like film, you have to be just a flat out good actor.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of comedic actors who like that's what they start in, and like people think, oh, you're just a comedic actor. That's not the case at all. A lot of the comedic roles and parts that like stand out to me are from actors who, you know, sometimes are more known for dramatic roles. Mm-hmm. And maybe not John C. Reilly too much, but he, god dang, he did a great job with Walk Hard. And it's not a great movie, but Philip Seymour Hoffman in Along Came Polly, I think it was, where he's the sidekick. Like, he steals that movie from everyone else.
Yeah. Well, if you ask people like a lot of people, it's like, what's your favorite Jim Carrey movie? And they'll be like, well, some people will say Ace Ventura, but a lot of people will say The Truman Show. And you say like, what's your favorite Adam Sandler movie? Some people will say Billy Madison. Some people will say Punch Drunk Love.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will say Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. But I mean, like, I did think there was not anybody in this movie that I thought like, oh, this is just like, they're bad. Like, they were all like, I mean, they weren't well-known actors, a lot of them, but they were like pretty good. Like, you can tell, like, they were putting forth some effort.
Yeah, and it might have just been, for some of them, it might have just been like, hey, these are my friends putting this thing together. But that went a long way to them doing the best they could for it, and
yeah,
I think it comes across their effort in the final product.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was a solid low budget. I mean, like, they didn't try and do too much. You know, they didn't try and do a bunch of different locations. They had their handful of locations, and they used them. Did a lot of shooting at night. You know, yeah. They kind of did I think kind of the right things, you know, to kind of stretch your buck and not, you know, not let on too much that you like kind of don't have enough, you know, you don't have a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. They, I mean, there's some lessons to be learned even when they're on the car chase. KCDC reaches over and buckles the seatbelt for the driver.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's there's a lot I love about this movie.
I saw, just an aside, it made me laugh so hard, but I saw a video of, it was one of the Halloween movies where, like Michael Myers gets in a car and is like following somebody. And like,
he drives slow.
It was like, well, he's like, they're like, look at Michael Myers, you know, perform, it was like, driver safety. And so he's like, he's pulling out onto the road, and he looks left, he looks right, and then he like follows the person. that was
good
funny
for him.
Yeah, but no, yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, it doesn't. I don't know if you were like kind of the headline, like the stuff I found funny in this were like the little things, They weren't like, you know, big crazy gags, but just like, you know, yeah, like, you know, the dude's trying to avoid. He doesn't want his love interest to see him. So he dives behind this car, like, awkwardly, you know, or just like these, it was like the, or the national anthem thing. Just little things. And I think, I mean, like, I don't know, like Ghostbusters is kind of the same way for me. Like, there's some big gags in that, but there's also little things that are, that when I think about that movie are funny, you know, like, Annie Potts answers the door of the firehouse and there's a police officer there with Rick Moranis, who's like, you know, stark raving mad. And instead of some crazy long, you know, some silly joke, she goes, she just says, picking up or dropping off. Like, like, or like, when, after, when Rick Moranis, oh no, when the demon dogs break, crashes into Rick Moranis's party. And at the end, like, the, there's a police officer there and somebody goes like, what happened? And he goes, oh, some maniac brought a cougar to the party and the thing went crazy. Like, just like, there's just like so many, like, you don't have to, you don't need a lot, you know, I don't know. And maybe it's just me. Maybe I find like little things funny, but I don't know. It's like life. It's like, it's the little moments that you kind of get the most pleasure from.
Yeah.
Sometimes the grand gags just don't, you know, they don't pan out like you hope. But just like, but I think that's like doing little things, like that's where like the actors come in. Like the guy could have just walked down that ladder instead of doing this little like hop down that like made me laugh.
Yeah. It's a goofy movie, but I don't know. There's some like, there's some thoughtfulness of like, when he says, when he's explaining how, you know, there's no more ducks in the, the town, he says something like, you know, what's a town with no ducks? How's someone supposed to get their stuff straightened out when there's no ducks? And you realize, yeah, they play kind of a peaceful role in nature and the environment around you. You know, you miss those things that you take for granted when they're gone.
There's no way to feed them.
Yeah.
This is a movie that like I wouldn't have, had you not recommended it, I never would have watched it. So yeah, no, it's, that's a, are
you,
that's a good thing.
Glad you watched it. It's hard to read. Would you recommend this to others?
It depends, because there's some people like, I don't know if like, I have friends where like, there's like we know like this movie is definitely like tongue in cheek.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know I have some friends that would not get that. They'd be like, that movie was dumb. Like, why would you have me watch that? But then I have other friends that would be like, that was hilarious. So I don't know. It's kind of a mixed bag for me. Like I say I would recommend it, but to certain friends that I know would get the joke. But I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad I watched it because it's good to watch. Again, like we live in a world where you can watch whatever at any time. And, you know, you're just like, okay, like I know I'll probably like this based on who's in it and all this stuff. But yeah, like back in the old days, like I used to go into a lot of movies, you know, it's just like, you know, you watch the movie on TV or in the movie theater and that was it. Or you went to the video store. So I went to go see movies. I didn't really know, like, yeah, I might kind of like it, but I didn't know much about it. I don't know. And then you find out like, oh, it's really good. I'm glad I saw that. So no, it's good. It's good to watch. I mean, I think that's what I like about doing this. Is, you know, we will watch movies that we wouldn't normally, like, would you have sat down and watched Laser Blast?
No.
Probably not. Yeah.
I wouldn't even, I see a lot of movies, but I wouldn't have ever come up on my radar.
I'm surprised I hadn't heard of it before. It's the Alamo Drafthouse distribution movie.
Yeah, it got really good reviews coming out of like the festival circuit when it came out. Is I think it was 2011.
Yeah.
But then I think those like South by Southwest and like the, what's the other one? You know, there's festivals kind of draw an audience that's maybe more willing to like go along with what a movie like this is showing. Like, I think it went from a lot of positive reviews and from festivals to like kind of mixed reviews with when it got a more general release, and which is fine. Doesn't mean it's a bad movie. Everyone's got their different tastes, and not everyone's gonna like everything. So, which is, you know, is fine. It kind of flew under the radar.
I probably would have liked this movie a lot more if I had seen it with a crowd. It's like, it'd be a great movie. Again, like, it would be a great movie to see at the Alamo Draft House. You have a few drinks, you got some friends, you're feeling silly. Like, I think that definitely it would have like amped up the enjoyment a little bit for me. But I mean, like, that being said, like, there was a lot of parts I found funny, you know. But yeah, hey, have you been to an Alamo Draft House?
I have not. I've never made the trip to visit one. I think the closest is probably either L.A. or San Francisco. I've heard good things.
So I went to the L.A. one. Like, it opened up, and I went to see Rise of Skywalker. And then the pandemic hit. And they all closed, and Alamo Draft House filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And I think they emerged from the bankruptcy. And I'm pretty sure they're still open, the LA one. But I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. And I know, like, the owner kind of got, like, they got embroiled in the whole Harry Knowles stuff. Yeah, that whole thing, because like that, some of those incidences like allegedly took place at their theaters with their employees and stuff like that. So
I see.
Yeah, so there was a whole thing about that. But I did enjoy it. The Los Angeles one, the food was great. I mean, because they were kind of the first to now like AMC's do that. Like, you can order food at your seat and all that kind of thing. I enjoyed it. I'd like to go back. Next time you come down, maybe we'll have to go to the Alamo Draft House here.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
I don't know if they're still doing and kind of researching this. So they have the Alamo Draft House distribution, but also the founders of Alamo Draft House, they also started, you know, that company Neon, the distribution company Neon. I don't know if they're a production company, but they've won Oscars and stuff. That's affiliated with them too. Or it was.
Yeah.
I don't know if that still is. But, yeah. Yeah. So again, I'm glad I watched it. I am glad I watched it. And again, I would recommend it to certain friends I know would be in on the joke and would appreciate the jokes. You know, like, I don't know, like, would I have recommended it to my parents? No, like, they would not have got it.
Yeah. It's fun. It's not for everyone. I don't know. I think it plays into the thing. Like, you know, I've driven over the Grapevine many times and recognized the name, but never really stopped and spent time in Fraser Park. But it's one of those places you might drive by, and there's probably plenty throughout the country that you might drive by and just not stop, but wonder, oh, I wonder what it's like to live there and to have kind of a fun depiction like this. So, you know, it is definitely not accurate, but a fun representation of what could go on is kind of enjoyable to me, at least.
Well, yeah. I mean, have you seen I like movies that take place in like a confined area, like Do the Right Thing takes place on a block, you know?
Yeah.
And also, have you seen David Lynch's Blue Velvet?
I have not.
Yeah. So, I mean, I find it kind of interesting. And it's just what you're saying, that like, there are these, the kind of the gist of that movie is like, you know, there's these, like, it's like a suburban, like normal, any neighborhood USA, but underneath that is this criminal underworld where like all these crazy things happen. Yeah, and when you're saying that, it kind of reminded me of that. Like, oh, Fraser Park. There's a whole other thing that goes on at night. Yeah, what's funny, like at the beginning of Blue Velvet, there's like he's like just the camera's kind of slowly panning across like houses with picket fences and you know, this idyllic neighborhood. And then the camera pans down into the grass where you see like ants and insects like fighting each other and stuff like that. And that's like the whole like, yeah, like everything, there's a facade of like everything's normal, but underneath there's a battle raging. Yeah, it's like, no, that's exactly, this is like the comedy version of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. And there's, if for anyone listening that watches and gets a kick out of it, there's three sequels that they've worked to put joking. Together that are not available for free, but they are out there.
Where are they? Are they based on other cities? Or?
Well, I don't know exactly.
Or they all take place in the FP?
Because it's actually hard to like find any synopsis of them. Let's see, the sequel FP2 Beats of Rage came out in 2018. FP3 Escape from Baco is 2021, which I'm guessing is Bakersfield.
That's pretty funny.
FP4 EVZ came out in 2022. I think there was Jay Sharon and Stacy throughout this movie like make reference of like, what do you want to do when you know let's get out of here and you know kind of restart their lives elsewhere without the outside of the FP. So I have a feeling that a lot of it is kind of continuing that story of getting out of all the turmoil that's there.
I like Escape from Baco because I can imagine that guy as like a Snake Plissken-esque kind of character.
Oh, yeah. There's it definitely that's Rambo, Rocky, Mad Max. Even I think there's influence from all of those and here and there in the movie.
I tell you what, if I was these guys, this is free business advice. I would try and if they had a video game version of this, I think it would totally work.
Well, it would. I mean, it was, I think when I read that the influence from it came, of course, from Dance Dance Revolution, but also the Def Jam Vendetta and Def Jam Fight for New York games, which I totally see in it. The for whatever people might think of the movie, they've gone on and done a lot. I mean, it's their dad, I think, had some history in Hollywood, but Brandon Trost was a cinematographer for a lot of projects. Their sister Sarah did the costumes for this movie, and she does costumes for like a lot of Danny McBride's projects.
It's like the Safdie brothers.
Yeah, they've gone on to do a lot of work in Hollywood. They've been pretty successful.
Speaking of costumes, we forgot about it. We glossed over the boots, the giant boots that he wears. And it's so funny because, like, it was his brother's boots, and then the coach like presents him with it, and there's these huge, like comedically large. Like boots that like would be totally impractical for playing a Dance Dance Revolution type game. but they serve no other purpose other than they look ridiculous, and that's like the joke.
Yeah, well, it's something to like, I don't know, it gives him that extra push to do his best, knowing that they're from his brother.
yeah. Was it some one person's that like at the end of the game it says like one person's the champ, one person's the chump.
Yeah,
you could totally do a video game version of this, and then you could probably get a whole new audience. People would be clamoring for that. You just do like a Kickstarter, get a developer, do the game, and then it could lead to more movies. or more games. But it's like I said, it's a low budget comedy that is, it kind of overachieves.
I'd say. And I think to add to the Hollywood connection, I think this was an early project produced by Jason Blum, who went on to create the Blumhouse production company. So,
they also, okay, I know what you mean. Blumhouse.
Listen, I'm going to say a lot of word names wrong on this podcast throughout the episode. So accept that.
Well, I tell you, they found a niche in that, because didn't they? I mean, because they, people their Invisible Man movie was really well received. And it was, because I mean, like, Universal got into this thing where they were going to do the Dark Universe, where they were going to take they were going to bring back the Universal monsters and have this whole interconnected, like, MCU type universe. And what you end up having are these big, like The Mummy and that Dracula, they had like a Dracula movie that it was just like these big bloated CG like monstrosities. And then finally they got the great idea, like, hey, these are monster movies. Why don't we do them like low budget, clever? And I think that's where the Invisible Man thing came in. It was a Blumhouse thing. And I don't know if it was the production, but I'm pretty sure, I think they produced it or something. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like, it hit the right note. It was better than, had they spent $200 million and got a bunch of stars and, you know, tried to make a crazy CG Invisible Man movie. But yeah, I think they got to do that. Like, take these movies. They'll be a lot more enjoyable. You take them back to their low budget roots. I think that's another, like, in doing this, all of these movies, with the exception of Dune Part 2, they've all been pretty much like low budget movies. I don't know. I think what I'm learning is, like, just because a movie, you don't have a lot of money, doesn't mean like automatically your movie's going to be bad. And I think, you know, even now, like some of these movies that, like the Oscar movies, like Past Lives, a lot of these are very low budget. And I think could be like a direct response to like all these years we've had of like Marvel movies dominating and stuff like that. Like, people might be kind of ready for something different.
Yeah. But have you seen Past Lives?
I have not.
I watched it just recently.
I should.
Again, another movie available on Canopy. Not that I want to advertise them a whole bunch, but
I heard it was amazing.
Really convenient and free. But it's good. That and like American Fiction, it's like two examples of like two well done stories that they're not these like,
they don't have special, huge, they don't have CG monsters in them.
Just a straightforward, well done, like projects that were fantastic.
Yeah, well, I mean, like even the big CG superhero movies, the ones that I like anyways are like they're stories about people, and it's kind of the human story that you relate to. The CG stuff is all bonus, you know. So yeah, I feel like we start to see the box office returns on some of these big budget movies drop. So it would not surprise me if people are just kind of fed up and they just want to see a compelling story about people. Imagine that.
It'd be nice. And then you can still do a superhero movie on a smaller budget. You know, it doesn't need to be over $200 million just because there's a cape involved. And, you know, there's all sorts of ways around it. Like, I think we talked about it previously, like, there's an advantage to having limitations on stuff. You find more creative ways to depict what you want, or maybe find ways. I mean, sometimes hinting at what you want to show instead of just showing it is a lot more effective.
Do you ever see that movie Brightburn a few years back?
No. That's like the evil Superman, right?
Yes. It was James Gunn.
I want to see it.
Produced. Maybe we should do it for this.
Yeah.
It's pretty low budget. I mean, it has like it has actors that you would know, like in some big in the like the main parts. But yeah, it's pretty small, like as small in scope as far as superhero movies go. But I saw it, like I was shook. I was like, "Whoa, it's pretty dark." And again, like it hits different when you're like a parent. But I remember like really enjoying it, and they at the end of they kind of leave open to like, hey, like there could be a sequel and stuff like that. But I think James Gunn recently said like there's no plans right now to do it. But yeah, I mean, low budget. I mean,
not everything needs a sequel.
Yeah, but it's like low budget, and it is heavily influenced by Superman, but it is kind of like its own thing. So yeah, I mean, give us some original stuff. Yeah, we'll have to. That's another thing. After we hit the record button to off, we've got to discuss what we want to do next. There's so many. I tell you what's awesome about this, Ryan. There's a lot of movies you haven't seen. I love when people. There's nothing more fun. There's one of my pleasures in life is like asking like finding out how somebody likes something. Like that you're familiar with. I don't know. It's weird. Like, hey, what did you think of this? Maybe you like it. Maybe you won't.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Yeah.
Movies are meant to be experienced in a community, even if it's just two people. Like, there's nothing worse than seeing a great movie and walking out of the theater and having nobody to talk to about it. That used to happen to me a lot, and it drive me crazy.
Yeah, me too. They don't even have to be like all the particularly great movies, but I know when I watched Darren Aronofsky's Mother, like first thing I wanted to do is talk to someone about it, and I knew no one who watched that thing.
Yeah, that's a case of like I was afraid to watch. Like I'm afraid to watch it. Because
I don't want to watch it again.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. But yeah. I wouldn't be opposed to watching it, but just like on my own, I'm like, I don't know.
But that was something like I don't know of any other experience where as the movie went on, I could feel my jaw dropping and just, like looking around at other people in the theater going like, are you guys watching the same movie I am? Because this is bonkers.
Oh, man. I felt like a little bit like that with the Joker movie, like the Joaquin Phoenix Joker. Like I saw it once and I was like, it was pretty intense. I don't know that I need to it's so intense that like the parts of the like it's super vivid like in my brain. So I'm I can just kind of like, I don't know that I need to. I might see it a second time. Like I might revisit it before the Joker 2 movie comes out. But yeah, sometimes it just leaves an impression and you're like, yeah, I'm good. Mm-hmm. I got it. It's all in here. It's in the brain.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah. Hey, Ryan, that is the FP. And I think it's a recommendation for you. And it's a qualified recommendation for me. I wouldn't recommend it to everybody.
Well, I mean, I think like, why not try it? I mean, go into it knowing you may not like it. If someone came to me and said, hey, you recommended this movie and I turned it off after 10 minutes because I didn't care for it, like, that's fine. Hopefully they don't think anything less of me for enjoying it. But so maybe it's a little bit more qualified for me than it sounds, but I think it's worth watching and having fun with.
Well, thank you. All right. Well, hey, guys, that wraps up this week's episode. We'll be back again with another one. But for Discount Film Critics, I'm Ray.
Yeah, this is Ryan.
All right, everybody. Have a great week. Talk to you soon.
Bye.